Welcome back to the Lucci Cast presented by Yeti, built for the wild. Visit yeti.com to check out gear that'll help you travel farther, camp longer, and live harder. No matter where the wild takes you, Yeti is ready to tackle your next adventure head on. I'm Billy Lucci, joined as always by the big truth, Hunter Goodwin. We will preview A&M's showdown at Kyle Field with the LSU Bayou Bengals. Okay, we are back. Billy Lucci, Hunter Goodwin. We're going to dive right into this, Hunter. You've been out. You're back. We're not going to completely rehash A&M, Arkansas, and A&M, South Carolina. Not been a lot to rehash over the last 2 weeks with A&M off. But we're going to just kind of talk about where the Aggies are at entering this. Who knows, Hunter? It might be four games and history made for this football team. They might reach a playoff. They might reach a New Year's Six Bowl. There's a lot out in front of them. We don't need to talk big picture or anything just yet, but we'll just try to talk to you. You're the X's and O's guy, and you're always you're the week-to-week guy, you know, on this schedule. You're like, I always joke, you're like the coach, the Tech Aggs coach. You don't want to look ahead. You want to – well, let's gauge some progress, and I want to talk to you about where A&M's at as they enter this very important, maybe program-changing, could change the whole trajectory of this thing, stretch of games. Where they're at, look, ever since Florida, you've seen Florida rise up. I heard Gene Chizik last night, Hunter, argue with my man Chris Doering, and I texted Chris joking about it. They were basically saying Florida just looks better than A&M. I know A&M beat Florida, but Florida just looks better. And Doering, the Gator, was kind of like, why do you say that? You know, like A&M's been throttling people ever since that Florida game, and they beat Florida. And Chizik kind of, I don't trust Mon, has been inconsistent lately. And then the last four games, it's 12 touchdowns, one pick. You look at the last couple of games, Arkansas and South Carolina. So A&M's just kind of off the radar, which is fine because Florida is either going to beat Alabama or be in, or they're going to lose and fall behind them. But I feel like people are still like Kirk Herbstreit. I mentioned they're sleeping on this team. I've been watching them. You've been watching them. They're kicking the teeth in of SEC oppositions the last 3 weeks. They were kind of on cruise control against Mississippi State, went on the road, smacked them around, never got serious. And then they put Arkansas away after one drive in the third quarter. And they put South Carolina away long before that. What have they done? And that's what we're going to dive into. What have they done in these last couple weeks to get there? And I guess I'll start with Hunter. How pleased were you with their performance in these last couple of games, or let's say the last three as a collective after that big win?
I mean, the Arkansas game was tremendous because that's just been a game we've perpetually struggled. South Carolina is not a deadbeat squad. There's athletes out there, and I thought they just mopped the floor. You know, it almost was, Billy, to me, like Arkansas – and South Carolina, two solid SEC opponents, felt like a non-conference Lamar and a Sam Houston, meaning that the run production, the dominance, the defensive play, the way we just kind of took care of business was very similar to how you feel when you walk out of a non-conference game. You know, and you ask a question, well, what are they doing? Well, you know, we started out as a team who was struggling to run the ball. Yeah. And we've quietly weekend gone from, you know, 160, 170, 180. We've just creeped up. We're at like 189.34 yards of net rushing per game. So what's shocking, you know, the entire 2019 season, we were at 159 net rushing per game. And in 18, which was arguably Jimbo's best year, we were 219 per game. So if we can continue to just climb that ladder and keep pushing closer and closer to 200 yards per game on the ground, which I think we can, you know, this is going to be a very, very difficult team a team you don't want to match up against, right? Because it will be a very, very difficult team to beat.
Great point here. And I also want to point out that those two seasons, there were three just absolute cupcake games, padding those stats as well. Northwestern State or Lamar or whoever. So,
correct.
And then to follow up, Hunter, on the other side of the ball, the Aggies right now today lead the SEC in total defense. That kind of snuck up on you. They're second against the run. They lead the league in total D. What have you seen on that side of the ball? What's been the – have you seen a tangible improvement, or does that have to do with you're not playing Alabama and Florida anymore?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. When you're currently ranked number 10 in the country, holding folks to like 95.67 yards per game rushing, I don't care who that's against, Billy. That's something to talk about, right?
Yeah.
When you played six SEC opponents, baked in that are Florida and Alabama, and you're giving up less than 100 yards rushing per game. I don't give a darn.
Number two rusher in the SEC to 50 yards 2 weeks ago.
That is freaking impressive. I mean, I think our passing D was shaky early on. It's improving. It's getting better. Thank God we don't have to play Alabama again, because I think they can make anybody look bad. But you're right. I mean, 338 yards in this day and age in total defense is a heck of a deal. You're number 26 in the country, and you're moving in the right direction. You're continuing to get better and climb and move in the right direction. So, listen, as fancy as his game has gotten and as sexy as maybe Kyle Trask is with some of his explosive players out on the edge, at the end of the day, what Florida's problem is and what kind of shocks me that Gene Chizik, of all people, can't figure this out, they're abysmal on defense. They're not worth it. I mean, they don't play good defense. So
yeah,
it's great that you have this great guy that can throw it around the yard. You've got an explosive tight end and great receivers. And Trask is playing really good football right now. But at the end of the day, what have we seen from every Big 12 team that goes to the college football playoffs? They can't win a game because they can't play defense. So if you can't play defense, you're not going to win at all. You're just not. So I think
mind-blowing to me, these talking heads that keep saying, and you're right, they're so – sexy is a great word, and they're so – enamored with Trask and his number. He's been brilliant. I think he should be by far and away the front runner for the Heisman right now. But like you said, OU had two Heisman winners that combined to win zero playoff games. Joe Burrow won a Heisman and won a national title because he had a defense that was playing incredible football in the second half of the season. And he had a running game. Florida, to me, doesn't have a great running game, and they certainly –
they have a very average running game.
Yeah, and everyone's so fixated on Florida right now. It's like, here's a team in maroon white that beat them head-to-head.
Well, I think, Billy, I mean, their coach did come out –
he didn't have – plays defense.
They came out – their head coach did come out in a Darth Vader uniform.
That's true. That's true.
And he did – and as they were walking into the stadium the other day, I think they're blaming A&M's – visitor locker room for why they had the COVID outbreak. So, I mean, you talk about a guy that is the excuse maker. I mean, he's making more excuses than Gabe's making right now to not come to work.
All right, let's go with this then. I one of Kellen Mond has been – we all the talk about Trask, and he, again, he's been brilliant. I'm not lobbying for Kellen to win a Heisman, but I am lobbying to say he's one of the more improved players. Through only six games, you got to close it out. There are four left. Through that point, he's one of the more improved players, I believe, in college football, and has been, I would say, brilliant against South Carolina, Arkansas, Florida. It wasn't a perfect game by any stretch against Mississippi State. It was kind of inconsistent. Not bad, not anything to write home about. But three of the last four games, he's been – brilliant. He wasn't bad in the fourth one. He just – they realized we can hand it off to 28 most of the game and be fine. What have you seen, Hunter, in the last month or so from number 11 outside of the obvious, which is – to me, the obvious is O-line's playing lights out. Running back, tight end, and Anais. Those three were true freshmen last year. Now they're grown men in year two. We get all of that. But what about Kellen, Hunter, that you've seen in the last four games or so where you go, this is why the guy's playing so well, and this is a big part of why A&M's winning the way they are?
Well, to start my response, I'm going to say this. When you look at sacks allowed, we're ranked number three, but the other two teams ahead of us have only played like a few games.
Okay, one
of
them. Yeah.
So it's really, really, if you look at teams that have played five or six games, we're number one in the country.
Yeah.
And the two sacks we gave up were against Vandy. And since then, we've been on a goose egg. So
incredible.
What has been incredible to see is Kellen, for much of his career, and last year especially, is not having to take, you know, brutal hits. And there's a couple of examples I think we're going to talk about later where while the pass rush or the pass protection isn't perfect, you can tell he has a great trust that our guys are going to finish and give him just enough time to make throws. And, you know, he's able to stand back there. He moves around in the pocket pretty well and throw the ball down the field. And I think the other thing is a big part of completions. If you look at the Arkansas game, a couple we're going to talk about here later, I think, where number nine runs a great route, but the protection was exceptional. And they just gave a little extra effort, which allowed him to step up and make the throw. And here's the deal. It wasn't a perfect throw. A little behind the receiver, the receiver is making play quarterback. And it's a combination of thinking, and it's like knock one over, there are consequences that fall. When you protect your quarterback, he gets trust and is more, he'll not flush out of the pocket. He's staying in the pocket. He's moving around the pocket. He's stepping up when necessary. And even in the perfect, his receivers, young receivers, by the way, are making plays on the ball. So yeah. I think he is playing better. I think mentally he's probably in the best place he's been from a confidence perspective. And as long as we can continue to run the ball, it's been fascinating to me, Billy, to watch that over the last, you know, I track every game, kind of what our percentage pass versus rush is. And it's just been like, we went from, you know, 50-50, and we begin to edge. In the last couple of games, we were 40% pass, 60% rush, 41% pass, 59% rush. And against the last opponent, we were 62% on the ground, almost 63%. So, there, you know, he only threw 26 passes in a game where you had 72 total plays. And like you said it yourself, they're taking a lot of pressure off him. And did a great job, I thought, of using play action and the run game to set up some big throws down the field. And through doing that in this modern day play action, they're making he's throwing into really big windows, which lets him really use his arm talent and get the ball in there. So I do think he's playing well. I'm not at all taking that from him, but I am going to land the plane. He is playing well because his receivers are catching the ball. They're getting open because of our ability to run the ball. We're able to create more space, and the offensive line is protecting him. And I can't tell you there is not a quarterback in the country or in the world at any level that likes to get hit, and it doesn't affect the way they think and process. And by them protecting him, and it's not just the line, it's the backs as well. There's a couple examples of clips y'all gave me where Spillers, you know, Kenyon Green had kind of overset on a blitzing linebacker against Arkansas. And right there, here comes Spillers, and he steps up and he just gives this extra effort and pushes this linebacker just an inch or two past Kellen and lets him step up and make a big third. And I think it was a third and five conversion pass down the field. But those are things that in the past we've not done, right? That edginess, they've hit Kellen, they've hit his arm, they've hit his pad as he's letting it go. And those things tend to make you throw the ball less accurately. So he is taking advantage of what they're doing.
We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, here's a message from our good friends at HEB.
Gear up for game day from the comfort of your home with HEB curbside and delivery. Save time, shop online, get all the deals. Use the new MyHEB mobile app, your game day MVP.
I've what I've been saying for the last year and a half, that if everything else gets better around him, the quarterback will get better as well. It stood the test of time, no matter how, whether you want to run the spread and no tight ends or seven tight ends or run the ball 60% of the time or 40%. When the weapons and the blocking and the quarterback are all in sync, the QB is going to look a hell of a lot better. Everybody's talking about the BYU quarterback, and I mean, guy sits back there and has all day to throw. They play less competition. They run the ball whenever they want. He drops back. It's incredible the way that works. And then you have the guys like Mahomes and Johnny that even when that's not there, they can create. But for the guys that aren't blessed like that, it's the blocking. Look at LSU last year. Look at Edwards-Helaire. Look at the receivers. Look at the O-line. A&M hasn't got that kind of offense going, but they have been fairly unstoppable since Florida, even against Florida. It's just different. They're not doing so much of the quick strike. Before we move into these clips, Hunter, and then close out with LSU, I want to ask you, I love when there's a new guy that you haven't seen a lot of and you start seeing him. Because like we said yesterday, you don't follow the recruiting like we do. But you watched a little – you saw Achane and your father-in-law and Holt watched him. Your son, they watched him in high school. They watched Fort Bend Marshall. So you were a little familiar more with him than you are the typical A&M signee. I know you took a vested interest in asking me all the time, are we going to get that guy? Are we going to get him? Now that you've seen him in the last couple weeks, touchdown against Arkansas – touchdown against South Carolina in 15, 17 touches or so. What, anybody he reminds you of and what's your first?
He reminds me of Robert Smith.
Really?
Yeah, he's kind of got that really unique glide and he doesn't really look like he's going that fast. But then when you look at him relative to everybody else, you realize he's going extremely fast.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of the A&M track coaches and, you know, he's one of the top 200 meter people in the country.
Yeah.
My understanding is his intent is to do both track and football here at A&M. Mm-hmm. You're right. My father-in-law, who I respect his view on players, came back after watching a high school playoff game with my son. And I mean, they were like, my son busts through the door. He's like, Dad, this guy's incredible. Like, you've got to listen to Poppy. That's what we call her, you know, his granddad. And man, they went on and on and on. And so we pulled up the game and watched it on TV. And he's going to have a tremendous career here. I can't wait till we can get, you know, Baylor Cup back healthy and do some two tight end stuff. With him doing outside zone and stretch plays, he is like the perfect player for that type of stuff. I mean, he's a glider. He makes it look effortless, but he's got world-class speed, literally world-class speed. So super, you know, when he scored – at home against Arkansas, my box went nuts. I mean, we've been a huge fan of his. He doesn't even know it, but my 11-year-old, I think that's his favorite player. So yeah, super, so happy he's an Aggie, and I am convinced he's going to have a tremendous career here. He'll be a name we'll be talking about for many years to come.
All right, and let's move forward. A couple names we're talking about right now that in the last couple weeks we kind of singled out is kind of being central figures to this thing. And one of them is Anaya Smith. So we're going to take a look here at a couple of touchdown plays by Anaya. You know, he really set a tone. He does it every week. Didn't have to as much against South Carolina, but did start the scoring for the Aggies up there with a short touchdown catch. He seems to do it every which way. But really in the first quarter against Arkansas, set that tone that, like, you guys aren't going to stop me. You're not going to stop this offense. You're not going to stop us running. You're not going to stop us throwing. Take us through that the first two touchdowns in the first quarter where it was kind of the Anaya Smith show on the wheel route and then also his touchdown run where he fought his way through. Looked like a little mini Jamar Toombs there, 200-pound Jamar Toombs fighting his way through defenders to the goal line.
Well, here's the thing, Billy, is that when they play him at running back and he's in pass protection, I brought this up on prior shows, and they bring any type of blitz, a linebacker, a safety, and it's his responsibility to pick up, you know, the most dangerous. Man, he looks like you said, a 250-pound guy. I mean, he'll meet you in the hole, and he'll make your eyes water. So you just don't see that. And I think when the ball's in his hands, he has the juke and the jive, and he's got the speed and the quickness. But, man, he'll put his head down and run you smooth over, and he'll fight for those extra yards. And I just think he brings such an attitude to the team. And if you watch his demeanor on the sidelines, he's slapping guys. He's having fun.
Great energy.
I mean, he gets back to, you know, some things we talked about earlier, is he's a guy that you can tell loves to play the game. He loves the physicality of it, and he doesn't let his size affect the way he plays. He plays much, much bigger than what his actual size is, and I love that about him. A lot of fun to watch.
All right, so, Hunter, why don't you take us through that first touchdown Anais had against Arkansas with about 4 minutes left in the first quarter, and the Aggies tied things up there.
Billy, this was a great call by Jimbo, and it's play action. I mean, in its essence, talking about setting this up, you're pounding them with the run, they can't stop you. And he runs kind of counter action is really what it is. He pulls Kenyon Green play side. He has the Spiller is the back. He's lined up to the left of the quarterback, and he takes a step and comes with counter motion. They actually bring a run blitz, and the linebacker, this is the one where Kenyon, when he was pulling out, got beat underneath.
Yeah.
And Anais, who's lined up out wide at the receiver position, he runs up on the DB, and they see run action. They think it's counter, something that we've done a lot throughout the game, and we're running it successfully. So he comes up to block. It appears to the secondary player that Anais is going to block him. And he acts like he's going to set hard and engage. And then he just squirts around to the right, runs into a big, huge window because the safety, it was two deep safeties. The safety had been on the play action, creating this huge gap and hole for him to sling the ball in there to Anais. But that was the one where I want to give credit where credit's due. While it was a great sales route by Anais, and he set it up excellent, it was actually failed execution in the offensive line. And the guy that made the play was Spiller.
Yeah.
Spiller did a tremendous job when Kenyon got beat underneath. He was kind of the backup helper, and he did exactly what he's supposed to do. He pushed the linebacker inside. He just fought, and he gave just that little extra effort at the end and was able to push him literally inches past Kellen. Kellen took one step to the right, stepped up, and made a beautiful throw to Anais for a touchdown on a 1st-and-10 play. That is, I thought it was a great play call. I thought it was a great execution, but that is a perfect example. That play is a hell of a lot less effective if we were not successful on the ground running the ball. In addition to that, that play would have failed in years past had the running back not been the safety valve and bailed out a poorly executed block up front. Those are examples of a winning play because it takes all 11 to do it. And I thought Anais really helped get himself open because he set up the fact because of his physicality and playing every game hard or every snap hard. I thought he really did a good job because if you're a guy that kind of is a soft blocker in the run game as a receiver, then the DBs, they don't really set hard to engage you. They kind of get, this guy's just, he's going to run out here and love tap me. But because he's a physical player, man, that guy set his hips. He sunk both his feet in the ground, was getting ready for contact. And the minute he did that, he was beat because Anais just ran right past him. By the time he turned his hips, there was 7-8 yards of separation. It made for a very easy throw for Kellen to make.
And now Dalton showing us the touchdown run with about 30 seconds left in the first quarter. And I think this one's as simple as, if you see anything in the blocking you want to talk about, but this is just a guy that is incredibly elusive in traffic. You see an Arkansas defender come up and just absolutely whiff. Then he takes on multiple contact at the 5-yard line and just wills his way at under 200 pounds across
the goal
line.
This was a really – I can't remember the yardage of the run, but when you look at it up front –
It's a first and 10 from the 15.
Yeah, and okay, so it almost looked, Billy, and you got to give some credit to Anais, but he almost went 13 and a half yards virtually untouched. So when you look at it up front – great double team at the line of scrimmage with the right tackle, right guard. It was a 3-man line. You had a zero nose. You had two ends kind of head up on or inside shade of the tackles. Great double team by the right tackle and right guard. Great double team by the center and the left guard. And it was a backside run, Billy. That's what made the play. And the block that really made it happen was the execution between the left tackle and actually the tight end. They were working the end up to the backer, and man, they came off the ball. They got great movement at the point of contact, and they were able to slip off at the exact right time. Wiedemeyer got up on the linebacker, and who led him in the hole was Spiller. It was a 2-back set. Spiller chipped and gave him a great big wide running lane, and he virtually ran untouched into the second level. And as you said, when the safety came up to try to make the tackle, he made him look like he was Ray Charles and he completely whiffed. But when you get him in open space like that, he is a very dangerous athlete, but it all started up front with worrying about the downs and moving the downs. And that's another thing we didn't do last year. We were too quick to get up on the second level and the downs would slough off and make plays. Our double teams were really sound between the right tackle, right guard and center and left guard and left tackle and tight end. Three double teams.
And speaking of tight ends, Jalen Wiedemeyer now, Hunter. I know you love your tight ends. We know Hunter Goodwin loves his tight ends. He loves his tight ends that keep improving his blockers too. But 4 touchdown receptions in the last 2 games. He has really started to be – not started to be. It's been this way for weeks now. He quietly had that 9-catch, 80-something-yard game against Alabama. They got kind of lost in the midst of a blowout. But just the impact seems to get greater and greater each week. 4 touchdowns in the 2 games since we last talked. And we got a couple.
It was shocking to me, Billy, when you watched the Arkansas game.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like their D coordinator really schemed to stop him.
Yeah.
And he made them pay dearly. They ran a lot of soft zone and really let him get off the line of scrimmage untouched. Something I pray that we don't do when we play LSU, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit. They've got a freshman tight end that
very
is listed
special
at 249, but I think is more like 240.
Yeah.
We need to be super physical with him and knock like his day needs to be, he needs to walk out of there taking a lot of vitamin or a lot of aspirin because he's got a headache. But anyways, Arkansas, back to Wiedemeyer. He's playing exceptionally good. He's got a great feel in space.
If you don't
take him out of the game and really account for him, he's going to have a big day against you. And I think he's been extremely effective in the red zone, which is where your tight end should play big. And I think he's just such a great athlete and can make so many plays with his hands and his feet. So it's a lot of fun to watch.
And there's a couple I wanted to talk about real quick. The one was when he lines up and basically goes up and catches it like he's a
receiver,
a 6'4" receiver getting faded up in the corner. I mean, and he is, he's 6'5" and he's got those kind of skills.
Yeah. We saw this last year. He's so freaking athletic. And when you get him down the red zone, I'm not sure the sequence of the plays you're going to show, but
this is the fade, the Arkansas fade touchdown. I want to talk about that one, and then just really
on the fade. It was really a great. I mean, they had really a high low option. They had a guy in the flat. They had a guy, another tight end, Rennick, I believe, was kind of shallow and hemmed deep. And you know, when you put that safety in a bind, he didn't know who to cover. You would have thought if he'd watched film, he would have probably given up the underneath to Rennick and stayed on Wiedemeyer, but he bit a little underneath and gave him space in the back of the end zone. And to your point, he just threw it up and it looked like a receiver going up to get it and grabbing the ball at the high point. So
and
tremendous effort by him and he makes it look really easy.
And the second touchdown against Arkansas to Jalen, which was also in the red zone, going into the zone. I think it was a 15-yarder there at the end or early in the third quarter that really kind of sent the message, I think, that the game was going to be – it was going to be another long half for the Arkansas defense. But I thought that was a pretty clever play as well, as you see him. And Kellen – I thought Kellen did a great job. You know, they're snapping it from the 15. He has to drop all the way back to the 25 and puts that ball right where it needs to be at the goal line. So that was a 25-yard throw in the air to an open receiver. I thought it was a nice design if you watch that play again.
Excellent design, great execution. He, you know, he runs the corner route kind of is very soft. He's just so athletic at the top of his stem. He doesn't really break it off hard. He just kind of rolls out of it.
Yeah. But
for whatever reason, seems to create tremendous separation. He's just got such great hands. Kellen did a good job of giving it to him at the high spot, and he goes up and catches it. He's playing exceptionally well.
And then finally, Dalton just sent it to you if you check it out. The touchdown against South Carolina, probably one of the more clever plays we've seen this year in the red zone. They've been so good, Hunter, in the damn red zone, haven't they? Like, I actually did the research on this. Do you know that in – how fascinating is it, or incredible execution this is? Hunter, 16 out of 19 trips in the red zone since – Bama, so Florida on 16 of 19 trips into the red zone, they have scored touchdowns. Now, can I tell you the three times they did not score touchdowns?
Sure. Educate me.
They kneeled the ball at the goal line against Mississippi State to run out the clock. And Anais, by the way, did score on the play before. They did. They, if they would have reviewed it, they would have overturned it. It was a touchdown. They kneeled the ball out at the one-yard line at the end of Mississippi State. They kicked a game-winning field goal against an exhausted Florida defense that they would have just walked their way into the end zone on. And they kicked a field goal on second and goal from the two at the end of the first half against Florida because they didn't have time. They very well and probably would be 19 of their last 19, not scoring in the red zone, but touchdowns, and that's unheard of. And so one of those plays was this great one to Weidemeyer where take us through that as we watch, because I thought it was a cool play and it was a terrific, and you'll probably find somebody else on this video too, but I thought terrific individual effort by Weidemeyer and Kellen to make that play happen because both of them had to be really deliberate and patient about what they did to make that thing go.
This has actually been a play, Lucci, that's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've seen great actors that even fall down. Yeah. But what you're basically doing is you're blocking on the backside. You come off hard and you sell like you're cutting that guy off. And then the quarterback's rolling out the opposite direction. So it looks like it's a play action, kind of the old flat route, deep corner route, and an over route. But instead, as he's rolling to his right, you actually come out and squirt out the backside, and you just get lost in all the shuffle. I've seen guys, like I said, will fall down and to further sell, then they get back up and run wide open. But mm-hmm. I thought it was a great, great job selling it by Jalen. He came off really hard. He engaged the guy. He stayed on him for, you know, 1,002, 1,003. Then he just kind of runs out into the flat, completely uncovered, nobody around him. And you know, like you said, Kellen's got to stop, set his feet, and turn completely back the other direction. Makes a really good throw. But well played, perfectly timed. Once again, another play call that doesn't work unless you're running the ball effectively. When you run the ball effectively, all of these plays – that are set up by showing a run work exceptionally well. When teams can pin their ears back and know you cannot run the ball effectively, a lot of these plays do not work well at all. So it is all driven by the play action is completely dependent upon running effectively running the ball effectively. And as long as we do that, you're going to see Jimbo pull out more and more things like this with great, talented guys that can do it. And go back to the Anais play we talked about, I don't know, 10 minutes ago. That play is a very long developing play because you're asking a receiver to run down the field, slow his feet down, sell to the secondary player that he's about to block and engage him, right? Square up and act like he's about to hit him. And then he's got to restart his momentum and get going again. You're talking about a play that's going to take 3 to 4 seconds, almost like a pitchback pass. Those type of plays take a long time, which means and you see Bama run these effectively all the time. You got to have great pass pro, which includes not just your front five, but your running backs as well.
We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, here's a message from our good friends at HEB.
At HEB.com, your personal HEB shopper will score all the delicious game day goodies you need. From chips and dip to prime one sliders, without sidelining your schedule. HEB, no store does more to save you time.
Let's go a little LSU here for a few minutes before we close this out. Coming out of this break, A&M sitting here on a 4-game winning streak, 5-1, ranked number 5 in the country. Hunter, this is as legitimate a chance because of who you've – look, I think it's this. Because of who you've beaten in Florida, that's a real substance win, and it's continued to gain substance since. They haven't gone away. You beat the number 6 team in the country and a Heisman Trophy front runner and a team that will follow that up by beating the brakes off of Georgia. Because you've played the 2 best teams in the conference outside of A&M's in that mix right now, and you've played them and they're out of the way and you split with them. And because you're better than the 4 teams you're playing, based on what we've seen from all 5 teams, including A&M so far this year, Texas A&M has been a better football team than the 4 they're playing. Guarantees nothing. We know that, especially this year, and especially because the gap isn't that wide. But it's a rare opportunity that's in front of them. You know, we think Jimbo's building a championship program. We see all the signs of it, Hunter. But all of a sudden you look up and you go, why not right now? And it starts Saturday with an LSU team that, as we said yesterday, and we don't need to go back into this, but embarrassed A&M last year. But the last time they came to Kyle Field, you got them. I imagine this one will probably fall somewhere in between 7 overtimes and a blowout. But let's start with LSU, Hunter, and let me ask you this. What is it about LSU that's good, that scares you, and that makes you say, hey, this is why eggs have to play well? And what is it that you see about them that's a weakness that A&M can exploit Saturday?
Good. I mean, they're pretty good at stopping the run. I think, mm-hmm. You know, we're number 10. They're number 37 in the country at stopping the run, only giving up 136 yards a game. That's kind of a bright spot for them. They're going to time a possession you and do what LSU always does. They're not near as explosive this year as they were last year with Burrows and all those receivers and that great running back. Here's the advantage for – so here's – that's my answer on what they do good. Here's my answer on where I think we can be very opportunistic and things lend themselves much more favorably to us statistically. Number one, I think they have a lot of youth at quarterback. They don't have a guy that's played a ton of reps. They're kind of moving from they played a bunch of different quarterbacks. The guy they played last week is a freshman, and those guys get rattled easily.
Our quarterback is your boy Brad Johnson's son.
Our quarterback's been sacked 2 times. Their quarterback through the game 6 has been sacked 14 times. So. They'll give up sacks. I think they're definitely susceptible in their pass protection. And so get to the quarterback, hit him, bang on him, you know, every throw he ought to have somebody's hands banging his pads and beating on him and hitting on him. Arkansas, you know, their 3-man rush and dropping the world in the kitchen sink, never put pressure on him. And I thought he had one of his better games throwing the ball, mm-hmm. but you've got to put pressure. I want to see a four-man rush, and I think with our four against their five, we can get pressure on him.
Okay.
Number two, they're not running the ball great. I mean, this is not an LSU team that's just can line up and 3 yards in a cloud of dust and run the ball down your throat. We're knocking on the door of 190 yards a game in net rushing, and they're at about 124, which puts them number 100 in the country. So they're on the lower end of the spectrum and running the ball. And everything we just talked about when analyzing Texas A&M is when you can stop the run, you put more pressure on a quarterback who's extremely young, who will have to hold the ball, right? Will get nervous, and you won't have these big gaping holes, which ends up lending itself that extra time in the pocket means you should get some sacks. So I hope Clemens is back and healthy, but I expect us to get some sacks against this quarterback, and you harass him all night and you stop the run effectively, you'll win this game handily. And that quarterback, whichever one they put out there, will not have a very productive night. And we need to have a full house and be nasty as we can be. And as Darth Vader said, we had 80,000 fans behind his bench. We need to have 85,000 fans behind the bench and basically drink heavily and, you know, get your rosary bead and go on Sunday and say, beg for forgiveness, because you're going to need it. Use lots of bad words.
Hey, and finally, when talking about this game, and again, we went into what it means and how important it is for the program and where it's going, but 2 full weeks off. So they haven't played a football game. When they take the field Saturday, it's going to be 3 weeks since they took the field. You had the, you know, A&M navigated that. They weren't affected really by COVID at all. And then all of a sudden, and it's a whole conversation for another day, but they didn't play Saturday without a single guy on the team with COVID, and they had to sit out a football game. But that, I'm not going to get you going on politics. But 2 weeks off and a whole week pretty much of no football, and then the guys come back, and then it's like X number of players couldn't even practice. So how concerned are you, Hunter, about rust and things like that? Or is this where having a veteran football team with a coach that's as meticulous as Jimbo pays off, and maybe you're actually better off from it because of letting all these guys rest up? You mentioned Clemens. They had a lot of guys banged up, and for 2 weeks they were kind of able to be on the shelf. I'm sure there are plenty of seasons you would have loved that, wouldn't you?
So here's how I'd answer that. I mean, my experience is that bye weeks and periods of time away from the game affect the offensive side of the ball much more than the defensive side of the ball. I think it's a bonus for the defensive side of the ball, for the Texas A&M defense, that guys that were banged up or had a nagging injury have gotten a lot of time to get themselves healthy, because you're just asked to do a lot less mentally playing the defensive side of the ball. And it's about effort and energy and excitement. And if you feel better and, you know, it's a loud home game with the atmosphere in Kyle Field, I have seen defenses actually slip less coming out of a bye. Sometimes by getting healthy, they play faster and play better. Where you're susceptible, because so much about offense is timing and precision, is, you know, you do have a lot of young receivers. You've got a veteran quarterback. You've got a veteran offensive line, and hopefully you can lean on those guys and run the ball effectively and take a lot of pressure off of them, because you would expect maybe some of that timing to be off a little bit. But hopefully the rust will get knocked off, or they'll get it knocked off this week going into practice. But my experience is the offensive side of the ball is affected more negative time away from the game.
I'll tell you what I'm really interested to see is LSU's defensive line, which you mentioned, against this A&M offensive line. I think LSU is going to play A&M more so like Bama, maybe, than a lot of these teams. Whereas what I'm saying is, as you're a lineman, you know what I'm saying here. They're going to guys against your guys, and I think it's a different kind of test than what A&M has maybe seen in recent weeks. and they still have really good players across that front. So I think this is just another in a long line of tests for this offensive line. And I think if they win that matchup, and you talk about the offense, and if they can establish a run early, that's how, to me, that's the formula for
this stat. I had to go back and like double check it when I read it the first time, but against Arkansas, they gave up 443 yards of offense and 18 minutes of time. Arkansas only had the ball.
They went 18 minutes.
Think about that. So 44 minutes of the game, LSU was on the field. So what that tells you is just they took a lot of deep shots down the field and they worked. So to me, you have to test them deep. You have to. I mean, you've got to throw some air out balls. And to me, hopefully, or they're a big, huge play. Yeah. You got to take shots. I mean, these guys have yet to prove they failed against Mississippi State in week one. And here they are, you know, five games later, and they're struggling against Arkansas. Yeah. And Felipe Franks is good, but not great. I think he throws a pretty good deep ball.
Yeah.
And clearly they saw something, but they deep balled the hell out of this LSU defense. So we've got to take some shots. And here's getting back to what I said a minute ago on your question about a bye in offense.
Yeah.
The best way to get beyond the little timing that's off and a little precision, take a freaking deep shot, 40 and 5, throw it up and let a guy be an athlete and make a play. And all of a sudden, everybody settles in and it kind of all the stuff goes away. And it's like, okay, this is how we play.
And you really made an interesting point too. You're talking about LSU and that lack of a running game, because if you didn't know better, you'd think they run it well if you watched them Saturday. But what you watch them run against a three-man front most of the game, and you watched them run against an Arkansas D-line that had like six of their D-linemen were out COVID protocol.
They had
one regular player. That would be like A&M going out there with DeMarvin Leal and no one else. And by the way, whoever they had out there ain't as good as DeMarvin. They had a whole group of guys that didn't play. So it allowed LSU to run. It allowed them to stay ahead of the changes. It allowed them to control the clock. That was a devastating blow for Arkansas's chances. Now they're facing the number two run defense in the SEC. So that is a matchup that on paper you go, well, maybe they're figuring out the running game. They're probably not, and I hope you're right about what you said about defense maybe being able to pick it back up. Well, Hunter, we'll talk all about LSU, and we'll preview. I don't know what game is going to be previewed. It's supposed to be Auburn, which will be a monster game, obviously. Bigsby got hurt this week. Their starting left tackle got hurt. We'll see if they're back, but they won comfortably against Tennessee. So we're going to – the big ones are coming, man. I mean, if you just take away all this, it's LSU, Auburn, Tennessee, and then probably the best offense in the league if you're just talking about the ability to score points in Ole Miss. So should be a fun finish. Who knows who we're previewing? I think it'll be Auburn. If my scheduling prowess is right, it could be Ole Miss. But we'll talk about that and we'll review LSU. And this has been a fun couple of days with you. Get back to work. We got the home stretch going. And then we got
Saturday.
And we got this going on over here. Wow. Dalton's rhyming. Dalton texted me, my internet is starting to crap. Let's try and rap. So I didn't realize his internet is, I guess, taking a crap.
I think he's tired.
Yeah, I think
so. He needs to go. He needs to have a little recovery session.
We need to cut Dalton some slack. It's 9:30 on a Sunday. All right, honey.
I was going to say, this is the hardest he's partied in years.
I'm loving the office.